cold. It trampled corpses into the mud as it strode towards him. Its whip lashed out and snatched a battle sister from her feet, hurling her through the air to crunch into the side of a tank with bone-breaking force. Its axe swung, and a tank was cloven almost in two, flames and smoke exploding from within. Without hope or reason, Blaskane raised his las pistol and fired again and again. The beams of energy flashed from the demon's breastplate, leaving no discernible mark. Kasagelt raised her shotgun and added her own fire to his. It made no difference. The demon lord stormed towards them, fire licking from its nostrils, vast bat wings spreading behind it.
"It has been a pleasure, sir," said Kasagelt. "No matter what happened on Cadia, it's been a damned honour."
Blaskane felt a wash of gratitude towards his adjutant. Then the demon's shadow engulfed them and brought cold terror with it. There came a flash of light, a flare of fire, and something streaked like lightning across Blaskane's field of vision. Something wet and scalding splashed him, and he fell back with a yell of pain. Blaskane hit the ground, and his gun spilled from his hand. He looked up, and there she was, standing over him, wings spread, and her Gemini superior stood at her side. The demon loomed above them, but something was wrong with it. More wrong, Blaskane corrected himself, feeling faintly unhinged. Its head looked strange, deformed, and then a great chunk of the demon's helm simply fell away, taking a chunk of its skull with it. The demon staggered, half blinded, and with boiling ichor spilling from its grievous wound. Celestine flicked bubbling gore from her blade and looked defiantly up at the monster.
"Come then, demon! Do your master's bidding, and I shall do mine!"
The demon bellowed and swept its axe in a scything arc, moving far faster than anything so massive had any business doing. Celestine parried, but the force of the blow was enough to throw her sideways into Blaskane's Torox. The vehicle rocked on its tracks with the force of the impact, and Blaskane cried out in horror. The Gemini Superior leapt skywards on trails of fire, unloading their bolt pistols again and again into the demon. It bellowed and swatted at them as shells punched into its flesh and detonated to leave gory craters. It lashed out with its whip and struck one of the Gemini from the air. She slammed into the ground near Blaskane and groaned in pain as she rolled over, stunned and bleeding. The demon turned towards Celestine, stomped towards her, raised its axe. Blaskane didn't think. He surged to his feet, snatching one of the sister's bolt pistols, and placed himself between the monster and the fallen saint. Blaskane squeezed the trigger and sent one, two, three self-propelled shells slamming into the demon's ravaged face. They detonated in quick succession and wrenched the demon's head sideways, ichor spraying from the wound. For a scant second, Blaskane allowed himself to believe that he had slain the monstrous thing. Then it turned the ravaged remains of its face back towards him, and he saw nothing but psychotic murder lust burning in its remaining eye. The demon swung its axe back and then swept it towards him. Blaskane felt a thunderous impact. Then everything went black. Beyond. Consciousness. A return to pain, to a quest unfulfilled. Celestine opened her eyes and saw Faith and Duty standing over her, their wings furled about their shoulders, their burning brands in hand. They looked down at her expectantly, and for a moment she felt nothing but exhaustion. She knew now who and what she was and understood something of the eternal task she was sworn to. Yet she still didn't know precisely where she was, why or how she found herself in this place. Her only certainties were that she had to follow the Emperor's light onwards, and that whatever forces were arrayed against her in this place, they surely weren't done testing her. The thought of struggling on just made her feel so tired that for a moment she almost let her eyes close again, Then she thought of how far she had come already, the dangers she had overcome, and the face of a little girl who was lost somewhere in this hellish realm. It was that last thought that drove Celestine to her feet. "How long?" she asked Faith and Duty.
"Time has little meaning here," said Faith.
"Long enough to recover some strength, at least," added Duty.
Celestine nodded. She gathered her blade up from where it lay near the executioner's mangled remains. Part of her had hoped that her wings might have been restored through rest, but a flex of her shoulders told her this was not the case. There was nothing there but a deep ache, the sharp soreness of wounds freshly closed. Every joint in her body ached, every tendon and muscle felt stretched past its tolerances, and she could feel every bruise and abrasion from her battles with the demonic entities of this realm. Celestine squared her shoulders and shut it all away, deep in her mind. She inspected her blade, as much to give herself a moment to find her centre as to ensure the weapon was in good condition. She'd already known it would be clean, shining, without nick or notch. She knew that the weapon was a gift from the Emperor, and that meant it was impervious to the corruption of this place. She hoped that the same was true of her.
"The cave, then?"
It wasn't really a question. She could see the glimmer of the Emperor's light, impossibly high above, but without wings there was no way she could continue the ascent up the mountain's face. Her limbs hurt at the mere thought.
"It seems the only route forward," said Faith. "And where there is a path to follow, you can be sure that the Emperor has placed it before your feet."
"Before we move, Duty, the girl..." Duty shook her head. Celestine noticed she looked younger now, her hair darker, her features a harder facsimile of Faith's.
"I am sorry, Saint, but I know no more of the child than you do yourself," Duty said. "If you do not yet remember who or what she is, or why you care for her so, then I can no more tell you than you can tell yourself."
"And neither of you knows where she went?"
"I saw her looking over the ledge shortly before I reached it."
Faith and Duty exchanged a glance, shook their heads apologetically.
"I did not see her, Saint," said Faith.
"Nor I," said Duty. "But I can offer you this gift. My service, Saint, always, and my blade."
With that, Duty knelt and presented the blade she had borne upon her back. As before, Celestine laid her own sword against it, and in a flash of light the two blades became one. Duty rose, burning brands in hand, and nodded once to Celestine with an unreadable look upon her face. Celestine took a last look back the way she had come, the warm wind tousling her hair as she gazed from the cliff face out over the formless, hazy wastes at her back. Then she turned towards the jagged cleft in the rock face to her fore, and, feeling the faint candle's warmth flicker upon her face, she walked into the darkness. The cave, it transpired, was more of a fissure. It was jagged and narrow. Celestine, Faith, and Duty were forced to pick their way carefully into the gloom, avoiding wickedly sharp shards of crystal that jutted from all around. Strange fires shimmered deep within the walls, clashing with the illumination from Faith and Duty's brands, and causing weird shadows to dance and jerk around them.
"At least we don't walk in darkness," said Duty.
"Rather darkness than the illumination of the unclean," replied Faith, picking her way around a vicious nest of crystal blades.
"It is the Emperor who provides our illumination," said Celestine.
She pressed on, her sisters advancing in her wake. As she did, a strange scent assailed her nostrils. It began as a curdled taint to the air, a slight tang of something sulphurous and sweet. The subtle scent became a rotten stench as they pressed on, and soon all three were breathing through their mouths and recoiling from the reek of putrefaction that swirled around them.
Something unutterably foul lies ahead, said Duty. Yet that is our path.
A grey-green mist was drifting around their feet now, and Celestine noticed that the crystal walls were streaked with veins of something black and slimy. It spread like capillaries beneath the glinting surface, pulsating slightly and resembling nothing so much as rot or mould. The fissure ended abruptly, emptying out into a huge cavern. No, Celestine realised, it was not a cavern.
A tunnel, she said aloud.
Roughly circular in shape, the tunnel's floor and ceiling were hundreds of feet apart, its walls equally far-spaced. It stretched away to right and left with numerous fissures, like the one they had crept through, radiating out from it. It was also noxious. The black fingers of rot became radiating root systems here, burrowing through the surface of the broken crystal on every side. A slick of thick, dripping slime coated the walls and ceiling and pooled in a stagnant mire upon the tunnel's floor. It was the colour of rancid pus, shot through with vivid streaks of what looked like diseased blood.
Emperor, protect us from the corruption of chaos, said Faith, choking on the revolting fumes that rose from the mire. Where now, Saint? Asked Duty. Do we follow this noisome tunnel, or try to find a route onwards through another fissure?
This tunnel was not manufactured, but rather borrowed. These side passages are nothing but cracks, where the overstressed crystal has fractured due to the passing of something huge, said Celestine. I don't believe they will lead us to anything but a dead end. Besides which, I feel the Emperor's light blooming against my left cheek. I believe that is our path.
The sinister side, breathed Duty. Perhaps we will be fortunate, and whatever abomination created this passage has moved away to our right.
Do you truly believe it would prove so easy? Asked Faith.
Duty snorted and shook her head. Celestine offered them both a grim smile.
We will be tested, and we will prevail. It is the way of this place and the will of the Emperor that it be so. Come, sisters, let us not keep our destiny waiting.
The passage snaked through the crystalline bedrock with a slow, undulating motion. It wound on and on, thick with billowing gases and a heavy stench of rot. The slurry that coated the floor varied in depth, so that one moment they might be trudging through ankle-deep filth, only to find that the next it reached up to their knees or even, for one intolerably revolting stretch, their waists. Celestine was thankful for the sealed armour that covered her body and kept the slime from touching her skin. She felt for her sisters, whose robes provided no such protection. Soon enough they were utterly caked in gangrenous liquid, their faces pale with nausea. Unnameable things floated amidst the slime, clots of matter and rotted bone that Celestine felt no desire to investigate. The mucal effluent that coated the walls became thicker the further they pressed on, dripping in heavy glops to land with noisome plops in the sludge of the tunnel floor. Again, Celestine found her sense of time fluctuating. It was hard to say how long they had pushed on through the river of filth, the tunnel snaking lazily through leftward and rightward bends, passing through crystalline grottos where stalagmites had been bulldozed aside and left to jut up from the slime in shattered pieces. The journey felt as interminable as the climb before it, an endless wading trudge with no end in sight. As they picked their way out of another, deeper mire and saw the tunnel arc once again to the right, Faith stumbled. Celestine caught her and pulled her upright again, but she saw to her alarm that Faith's skin was sheened with sweat and her eyes were red-rimmed and feverish. Her hair was plastered to her cheeks and neck, and she was shivering as though palsied. The fires of Faith's brands had died, leaving her clutching a pair of blackened sticks.
Saint, I am sorry. This
place, gasped Faith. I ail.
Celestine looked at Duty, who stood pale and grim-faced, but otherwise untouched.
We will support you, sister,
said Celestine, ignoring the aches and pains that howled from every inch of her body. She swung one of Faith's arms around her shoulders, and Duty did the same on the other side. So they pressed on again, slow ripples spreading away from them as they ploughed through the nightmarish river of filth. From around the next bend, Celestine heard a low murmur of sound, growing steadily in volume as she drew closer.
Voices?
Asked Duty.
The moans of the damned,
croaked Faith. Celestine felt herself grow cold at the awful sound, felt the hairs rise on the nape of her neck. Faith's prophecy was borne out as they rounded the slow bend to a ghastly sight. The tunnel bored away from them, arrow straight and disappearing into a haze of brownish-green gases and whirling motes that Celestine realized were flies. The walls and ceiling of the tunnel writhed with movement, and it took her a moment to make sense of it. When she did, Celestine's mouth drew down in horror and revulsion.
People,
Duty said, sounding equally aghast.
There must be thousands of them,
said Faith dully, head lolling as she stared through the lank hair of her fringe. Human shapes carpeted the walls and ceiling of the tunnel, apparently stuck fast in layers of thickened slime. Looking at those closest to her, Celestine saw that they all exhibited signs of decay and disease. Flesh crawled with fat buboes and dripping lesions. Parasites swarmed through lank hair that came away in clumps. Eyes stared blindly, yellowed with cataracts, while mouths full of rotted teeth and blackened gums opened to emit piteous moans of despair.
What new horror is this? Asked Celestine.
Duty only shook her head, while Faith gave a low moan alarmingly close to the sounds coming from the damned souls trapped in the tunnel.
Is that something moving down there?
Asked Duty, pointing with one of her brands. As she did, Celestine noted its fire was guttering, but her attention was caught by the suggestion of something stirring at the corridor's far end. Something truly immense.
Whatever hewed this tunnel and created this hellish place draws near, Celestine said. Here, then, is our test.
Do you still feel the Emperor's light, Saint?
Asked Duty, stifling a cough. Celestine glanced at her and saw that her sister was beginning to flag, much like Faith before her.
I do, she said.
The sensation of candle warmth still caressed her skin, feeling as though it shone down upon her brow like the fleeting warmth of a winter's sun.
That is good, said Duty,
before her knees gave way and she pitched forwards. Celestine cursed as Duty slumped on hands and knees into the diseased sludge of the tunnel floor, carrying Faith down with her. Sheathing her blade, trying to ignore the huge form surging gradually closer along the tunnel, Celestine grabbed both of her sisters by their robes and dragged them to where the floor curved up into the nearest wall. Damned figures turned their blight-rattled faces towards her and gave pleading moans. Several raised shaking hands to grasp at her. Others waved rotted stumps in desperation. Celestine ignored them, though it pained her to do so. She had no desire to lean her sisters up against the slime-slick wall, but it was that or let them slip into the sludge and drown. She propped Faith and Duty beside one another, making sure they still had a grip upon their brands. They looked at her gratefully, doing what little they could to help.
Saint, tried Duty. Sorry.
Hush. Just do not let yourselves become like them, said Celestine. I need you, both of you, if any of us is ever to escape this nether hell alive, for now I will stand in your defence.
So saying, Celestine took several paces back into the slime, looking for more level ground. She braced her feet and brandished her blade, trying to penetrate the murk to make out precisely what was flowing down the tunnel to meet her. It didn't take long to resolve, and when it did, Celestine wished the creature had stayed hidden. What approached was an immense maggot, its pallid flesh bulging taut and undulating. Thousands of chitinous legs jutted from its mass and dragged it along the tunnel, sending bow waves of filth rolling before it and heedlessly crushing those damned souls unlucky enough to be ground over by its immense bulk. Cyst-like openings squirted sprays of slime with every motion, coating the walls and drizzling down to the floor below. A wave of indescribable stench flowed before the creature, so utterly foul that it made Celestine light-headed. Worst, though, was the thing's face. At its front, the vast demon maggot tapered, segments of chitinous armour gathering in overlapping waves around an immense maw. Several circular rows of fangs, the size of battle tanks, gnashed at her as the maggot got closer. Within, protruding from amidst a mass of pulsating red flesh, like some obscene tongue, was a distinctly humanoid head, the size of a boulder. Three eyes stared at her, bulging black orbs ringed red and dripping tears of pus. Cracked and rotted antlers protruded above them, while below was a leering mouth, several feet wide, lined with razor fangs, and set amidst quivering white jowls and chins. With a sound like a thousand sacks of offal being shaken together, the demon maggot drew to a halt, looming over Celestine. She held her blade high, and it glinted in the half-light. Flies and stinking gases billowed around her, and the monster's smile widened. Though it could have crushed her in an instant, Celestine was surprised as the maggot showed no signs of attacking.
"Whatever you are, creature, you stand between me and the Emperor's light," said Celestine.
"Oh, little saint," rumbled the maggot,
bilious slime drizzling from its mouth as it spoke.
"I am far too swollen to stand at all. Do you not clearly see my munificent magnificence?"
"I see an abomination," said Celestine. "I see a foul demon of the Chaos Gods that I shall smite down with the Emperor's wrath."
Even as she said it, Celestine knew how ridiculous a threat it was. The creature was several hundred feet in height, and she had no way of telling how far back its revolting body stretched. Miles did not seem an unreasonable guess.
"And how would you do that?"
asked the demon in an affable tone, as though discussing an amusing hypothetical with a fractious child.
"I mean you no disrespect, mortal, but you are so very tiny and, well..."
The maggot shook its huge body, causing the entire tunnel to shudder in sympathy. The groans of the damned grew to terrified wails.
"Why, he will devour you in a single bite,"
the monster roared, before breaking into a booming salvo of laughter that caused Celestine to stagger.
"The Emperor will guide my blade,"
she said, desperately seeking any place that she could strike at this monster. Its face seemed an obvious target, yet even that was more than 100 feet above her, beyond rings of cracked fangs and dripping acidic slime.
"If you only had your wings, morsel,"
said the demon, as though reading her thoughts. It pouted its lips in a revolting moo of mock sadness.
"But you don't. Your sickly little sister cut them off, didn't she? Oh, the irony."
As the echoes of the demon's cheerful bellow rolled away, Celestine stared up at it. Perhaps if she could goad it closer.
"If you are so powerful and I so weak, why do you hesitate?" she asked. "Come and devour me, if I am but a morsel to you."
The demon laughed again, sending ripples rolling down its slime-slick body.
"I do not need to devour such a fragment as you. I wish only to enjoy discourse. You are going nowhere, little saint."
Celestine stared defiantly up at the demon. She stole a glance at her sisters and saw to her horror that blotches and rashes were creeping over their skin as the slime of the tunnel walls slowly sealed itself around their forms. Duty stirred weakly. Faith just lay, catatonic, as the slime lay claim upon her. Celestine looked back at the demon, despising its knowing, somehow sympathetic smile.
"Whatever you're going to do, you need to do it quickly," chuckled the demon. "Yet what is there to do, little morsel? You cannot go back. Your emperor expects you to go. Only forwards, always forwards. Yet here I am, the immovable obstacle that puts the lie to your irresistible force. You cannot help them. You can only watch them sicken into damnation. Entropy is a beautiful gift."
"I do not accept that," snarled Celestine. She took three running steps and launched herself at the demon. She leapt high and brought her blade down in a whistling arc, slashing easily through pale maggot flesh. She was immediately driven back as rancid fat and slime jetted out from the wound and splattered her from head to toe. She staggered, retching and spitting, coated in stinking filth. As she ground the slime from her eyes, she heard the demon laughing and saw the wound she had inflicted sucking slowly shut.
"I felt not a thing, little morsel," mused the demon. "But by all means keep hacking away, that is, if you don't mind drowning yourself. Grandfather Nurgle has been most generous to me. I am full to the brim with his magnanimity."
Celestine spat, a small part of her mind screaming in horror as she felt things wriggling through the slime that had coated her.
"What do you want?"
she shouted, frustrated and furious.
"I just wish for you to realize how damnably powerless you are,"
said the demon, and to her horror Celestine was sure this time that it sounded truly sympathetic.
"You follow your emperor's light, and a little faith, a little duty, these things are supposed to be enough to propel you along the path. The obstacles he expects you to overcome, the horrors you must face, the hardships you must endure. And for what?"
Again, the image of the girl's face flashed into Celestine's mind. But as she looked up at the immovable cliff of diseased flesh looming over her, she felt despair threaten.
"Oh, I know. How can you ever reach her with me in the way?"
asked the maggot.
"Poor little child, lost and alone in the realm of the gods, and you powerless to help her. I don't suppose she'll last long, if she's even made it this far."
The demon shook its head sorrowfully. Celestine's mind raced, but she could not see any way out.
"Your sisters sicken. There are minutes at most until they are beyond your aid,"
said the demon.
"You are thinking that you could perhaps flee, drag them with you and find another route. But you know that wouldn't work. You are tired, Celestine. Even your despotic emperor knows you'll never make it.
Celestine felt the truth of the demon's words as every ache and pain that she had shut away surged back to the surface. Her knees wobbled for a moment. Her grip almost faltered upon her blade.
I do not wish to eat you, little morsel, but...
The demon seemed to consider for a moment.
Perhaps it would be kindest. You have failed them, after all.
In that moment, Celestine knew that the demon meant not only her sisters, not only the mysterious girl to whom she felt such a strange, wordless bond, not even the Emperor. She stared along the corridor at the countless human souls trapped in despair. Had they all died because of her?
If only you had ended the war as you said you would,
sighed the demon.
But I understand. You are one woman, and it is such a vast galaxy. You have more chance of heaving my bulk aside single-handed than you have of extinguishing the fires of war that swallow the stars.
Celestine felt doubt gnawing its way into her heart. Mucal filth had all but claimed her sisters now. They had begun to resemble the other damned souls trapped in this terrible place. What could one person do against such overwhelming horror? She thought. Her faith in the Emperor had brought no aid that she could see. Her duty was clear to her, but it was too big for her alone, surely. I cannot, she whispered as a moment of weakness shook her, and her exhaustion returned a thousandfold. I just cannot. Then she looked up into the demon's eyes and saw hunger there, the avaricious leer of a miser about to gather up another armload of coin. She thought about the girl, lost and alone in a land of monsters such as these. She felt a moment's self-loathing at her own weakness, but saw that in turn for the trap it was. No, she didn't hate herself for all of this. She hated the demons that tormented her, and her sisters, and all the other humans that they treated as little more than playthings, soul currency to be gathered up as a dragon hoards gold. You desire me to surrender? To relent? Spat Celestine, standing straighter. You want me to give up because you know that the only way you will ever stop me fighting is if I lay down my blade of my own volition, she said, raising her sword before her again. She felt righteous anger well within her, white, hot fury that this revolting mound of offal had so nearly manipulated her into giving in.
What is there to fight for?
Asked the demon, its tone mocking.
An emperor that doesn't care about you. A species of pitiful, selfish beings who know little of your sacrifices for them and care even less. They have all given up already, Celestine, and that makes them wiser than you.
Revolting spittle sprayed Celestine as the demon bellowed, and its rotten stench redoubled in foulness. She ignored both. And whose word do I have for that, demon? Spat Celestine, standing firm against its ground-quaking bellow. Ever since I awoke in this place, filth like you have been trying to convince me that my task is thankless, endless, doomed. But that begs the question, why would the demons of this realm keep trying to convince me of such a thing, unless it were a lie designed to rob my strength and steal my will? Unless, in fact, I stand tall in the love and light of the Emperor, a blade in the hand of the entire human race. Celestine's voice rose to a shout, and as it did, a golden halo leapt into being at her brow. She felt a magnificent unfurling between her shoulders as golden wings grew once more from her shoulder blades and stretched out behind her.
"You are nothing!"
roared the demon, all hint of its former solicitous tone drowned in a tide of anger and contempt.
"Who are you to stand against the storm of the primordial annihilator?"
"I am Saint Celestine of Terror, you sack of rancid filth, and until my last breath I will defy you and the vermin gods you serve."
Celestine leapt, her wings beating powerfully and carrying her towards the demon maggot's head. At the same time, golden radiance surged from her like a newborn star, flooding the tunnel and causing the demon to recoil with a roar of pain.
"I name you the Worm of Doubt," cried Celestine, weaving around the thing's huge fangs and lashing out with her blade, "and I strike you down for all of humanity."
Her blade bit home, lopping the demon's head from its fleshy neck in a single clean cut. The head splashed into the slime, still bellowing in fury, and the monster's body surged forwards, attempting to crush or devour Celestine. Yet where her radiance shone along the passageway, the worm's thousands of victims were stirring and gasping, their ailments sloughing away and their strength returning. Thousands of faces twisted in sudden anger as they realized that the worm had fed upon their despair and trapped them within its foul larder. Thousands of hands reached out to snatch at the demon's rancid flanks, to punch and tear. Warriors drew blades no longer crumbling to rust. Soldiers swung firearms to bear that until moments earlier had been nothing but ancient junk. The Worm of Doubt writhed as its viscous hide was punctured from thousands of points at once. Celestine felt the blazing heat of flames at her back as faith and duty soared up to join her and pour their fire into the ragged stump of the demon's neck.
"My thanks, Saint," said Duty.
"I am sorry that we failed you," said Faith.
"You have never failed me," replied Celestine. "Let us finish this together." With that, they lunged at the demon as its victims tore at it from every side. Half drowned in its own filth, the worm's head continued to rant and rave, but its howls became piteous wails of agony as more and more of its fleshy body was torn and blasted. The immense maggot writhed, its limbs lashing out to tear its victims apart by the dozen. It crushed more into paste against the tunnel walls and snapped at Celestine, Faith, and Duty with its huge maw. They wove easily aside from its clumsy attacks, three angels striking again and again with fire and blade. The light of the Emperor shone from them all, with the radiance of a furious star that burned deep into the demon's flesh and reduced swathes of its flesh to cracked black ash. Wailing in agony, the demon jackknifed its huge body. Its immense forequarters slammed against the tunnel roof once, twice, thrice. On the fourth impact, the crystal cracked and shattered. By the sixth, jagged cracks raced along the tunnel and shards of crystal rained down to puncture the vast, revolting maggot. At the eighth thunderous blow, the tunnel's ceiling sundered altogether and the entire space caved in with a shattering roar, like a billion mirrors breaking. Daylight showed through the shattered mass.
"Now!" shouted Faith as crystal shards rained around them. "Before we are crushed!"
"What of the demon's victims?" cried Duty.
"They have already earned their freedom from this damnation," said Celestine with warm certainty. "They are victims of despair no longer, and in death their souls will fly free to join with the Emperor's light. We must follow them."
Her sisters needed no further urging. The three angels beat their wings and surged upwards through the jagged rain of crystal shards, leaving the Worm of Doubt to be crushed by the devastation of its own death throes. Above, golden light blossomed, and warmth bathed Celestine's face.
"The light of the Emperor!"
she cried, and drove upwards through the last of the crystal rain, into the golden skies beyond. Chapter 4 415th day of the war, 1840 hours. Imperium Nihilus, planet Kofin, 2 miles from the walls of Shambach. LO801-1/LA631-3. Blaskane woke to the sway of the Torocs crossing rough ground. The familiar smell of unwashed bodies in a close metal box invaded his nostrils. The sounds of the engine rumbling and his command staff talking into Vox headsets reached his ears. It was comforting somehow.
"Wah!"
Blaskane croaked before a coughing fit seized him and doubled him over. At least it tried to, but he found his movements restricted. He opened his eyes to see Lieutenant Kassegeld and a regimental medique leaning over him, looking both pleased and concerned.
"Thank the Emperor,"
said Kassegeld, hastening to undo the straps that Blaskane realized were binding him to one of the Torox's bench seats.
"Careful when you sit up, Major," said the gruff medique. "You're still on the mend, sir."
Blaskane waved them away, coughing again as he rolled into a sitting position and immediately regretted it. Pain stabbed at him from what felt like every part of his body. His head felt light and woozy, his limbs weirdly numb.
Water,
he managed to croak, and a metal flask was pressed carefully but insistently into his palm. He looked up gratefully at Kassegeld, whose face wore a professional veneer of concern, then put the canteen to his lips and drank. It was glorious.
"Not too much, sir. You've been unconscious for a couple of days,"
said the medique.
"You've been on thrice-blessed intravenous fluids, so your body will need to adjust to the introduction of more mundane humours."
"Blessed?"
asked Blaskane, wincing up at the man. His head felt muzzy, and something was off about the balance of his body. "The saint herself," said Kassegeld, a hint of awe in her voice. "You saved her life," she said, "and so..." Blaskane blinked. The saint had blessed the Medicaid fluids that had been pumped into him. Hazy memories pierced themselves back together, and he flinched at the thought of the demonic horror he had stood against. He couldn't picture it now, he found. Only a roaring darkness, a blood-fire haze. His mind was protecting itself, he supposed. His sanity might not long survive that sort of memory.
"Sir, your wounds were substantial," said the medique. "Compression breaks, crush injuries, impact trauma. I have done everything I can, but you will need to see an augmeticist as soon as possible. Third grade or above, I would say."
"Wait, what?"
Blaskane's thoughts snapped into sharper focus at the word augmeticist. Those who fitted bionic augmetics. Augmetics to replace parts of the human body too broken to be saved. He gritted his teeth and looked down. Blaskane stared at his broken body for a moment, the foreshortened stump of his left arm, the bulky compression harness whose pipes vanished into his chest and abdomen, the heavy bionic splint cage that encased his left leg, joints like rivets punching through stitch-puckered flesh.
"Oh,"
said Blaskane in a small voice, then promptly vomited his first drink in 3 days all over his lap. Half an hour later, the Major had dressed as best he could in a spare uniform. The medique had, with profuse apologies, been forced to cut holes in the garments to allow for the ugly surgical enhancements. Blaskane bore the man's attentions with what shaky dignity he could muster. Now he sat on the same bench that he had apparently bled upon, and been operated upon, and then lain upon as he teetered slowly back from the mortal brink. He held a foil ration pack in one hand, in his only hand, sucking its paste-like contents through a straw as Cassegelt spoke. Something in the back of his head wanted to start screaming. Blascane instead took refuge in the emotional numbness that had settled in his mind like a blanket of snow. He would bury himself under that blanket for as long as he could. Hopefully he wouldn't have to really face any of this. Not really, before their desperate mission saw them all dead. He realized his thoughts had wandered.
"I'm sorry, Astrid. Could you repeat that?"
he asked, his words still a touch slower than he was used to. After effects of the anesthetic filters, according to the Medicaid. Blascane wondered if it had more to do with being smashed 300 yards through the air by... No, he wouldn't think about that. He forced himself to focus on his adjutant to make sense of her words. Cassegelt glanced down at the data slate in her hand, then back to Blascane. Masking a flash of sympathy, he wondered, or maybe disquiet? After all, was he really in any fit state to act as senior officer?
"Of course, sir," she said.
"As I was saying, since the crater fields, we have remained undetected by enemy forces during our advance through the agroponic hydroplexes outside the city. In the days since you lost consciousness, we have seen no further sign of the enemy."
"None?"
asked Blascane, a sudden surge of suspicion dispelling the fog around his mind, like cold water dashed in his face.
"Isn't this meant to be their heartland? Their seat of power? They should be on us like blood mites."
"There are several theories," said Cassegelt, clearing her throat. "Captain Macklin maintains this must be evidence of further Imperial holdouts still besieged elsewhere on the planet, and that the war engine emptied his territories of followers in a bid to crush us all. That does seem viable."
"You said several theories?"
asked Blascane.
"Yes, sir," said Cassegelt. "Vel Marchand is adamant that the enemy believed their ambush would crush us, that they have arrogantly left themselves no second line of defense."
"In a 100-mile radius?
Asked Blascane.
"No, he's wrong."
"I thought so too, sir. The other prevailing theory, which I should say stems from the Battle Sisters, is that it is a miracle. They say the Emperor has favored us and hidden us from the enemy's sight that we might do his work."
There was a moment's silence between the Cadians before Blascane nodded.
"That also sounds plausible," he said.
I suppose. Yes, sir, given everything else we've seen."
"It's all right, Astrid,"
he said wearily.
"I know what you're thinking. But why not? We've fought demons from Scripture. We've seen an angel of the Emperor banish them. Thrown, when that thing came for her, I didn't hesitate."
"You were incredibly brave, sir,"
said Cassegelt, but he waved her away.
"You never know,"
he said, his mind wandering back to his last sight of Cadia.
"Perhaps I've reset the scales a little in my favor. Anyway, what do the other officers think? Meritorious? Tasker?"
Cassegelt cleared her throat.
"As I said, sir, Lieutenant Tasker was killed during the ambush, along with the great majority of his soldiers."
"Ah, yes, you did,"
said Blascane, trying and failing to recall her words.
"And our other casualties?"
"Again, as I said, sir, they were substantial. The full breakdown is here for you to see if you wish. But in essence, we have perhaps half our starting infantry strength remaining, a little over a third of our tanks, and a handful of self-propelled artillery pieces. Oh, and the surviving Battle Sisters and priests, of course."
"So barely enough to stage a stand-up fight,"
said Blaskane.
We also have the living saint on our side, replied Cassagilt.
That we do, Astrid, and she may yet see some of us through this, said Blaskane. What remains of us, anyway.
He managed not to glance down at his ruined body.
We can hope and pray, sir, said Cassagilt. We'll know one way or another soon enough. The crusade left the Agroponics behind several hours ago and entered the spoil zone around the city. We've a few last ridges to crest, and then we'll be in sight of the walls.
And then, I would imagine, even our luck, blessings, whatever they are, will run dry, said Blaskane. Still, no sense delaying things. Hand me that data slate.
Cassagilt hesitated. Blaskane realized that the hand he tried to reach out with was no longer there. He cleared his throat and set aside his ration pack before reaching out to take the slate. Unctorian Goffrey lurked in the shadow of Blaskane's Torox. The vehicle had stopped on the leeward slope of the last ridge before Shambach, using the high crest of the spoil to shield it partly from enemy eyes. Dozens of armoured vehicles and thousands of soldiers waited around it. They had drawn up into attack formations, but halted here to await the final plunge. Goffrey had chanced a quick look over the ridge, had seen the ancient stone city that rose up in tangled tiers to meet the feet of Mount Imperator. The mine workings could be seen up there amidst the streets of the Ore District, their cavernous entrances glowing with unholy red light. Spike-lined ditches had been dug outside the city limits to foul an attacker's approach. High ferricrete walls had been raised around the city of ingots, incongruous in their ugly functionality. Their ramparts were lined with various heavy cannons and artillery emplacements, and thronged with cultists. Red banners rose above them, while emblazoned upon the ugly walls were runes to both the Blood God and the War Engine. The latter sigil depicted a crude, humanoid figure formed from interlocking gears. It had a horned helm, an axe for one hand and a cannon for the other. Some claimed it depicted the War Engine himself, though Goffrey was confident that was an exaggeration, spread around by the renegade warlord to appear more fearsome. The enemies of the Emperor were given to falsehoods, he had thought, casting a venomous glance towards the Battle Sisters and their so-called saint. Goffrey had then drifted down to his current position of concealment, most Cadians giving him a wide berth. A couple of sentries had tried to move Goffrey along, but he had transfixed them with his wild-eyed stare and nudged hard. They had been 100 paces away, walking downhill and entirely unsure of their purpose, before they had regained the capacity for independent thought. By then, Goffrey was out of sight and out of mind. Now, he listened with self-righteous anger as Major Blaskane held a vox conference with Celestine and the other Crusade leaders. The soldiers around Blaskane's transport had cheered the man when he had emerged, awkwardly, from its top hatch to survey the scene. Cheered was perhaps too restrained a word. They had all but praised the Major as though he himself were another risen saint. It had been his self-sacrificing act that had done it, of course, stepping in the way of the rampaging warp entity long enough for Celestine to find her feet and for the Cadian tank captain to draw a firing solution. The next instant, the demon had vanished under a hail of artillery fire and sword blows, and the battle had turned from there. Blaskane had paid for that victory with his own blood. His mangled body would never fully recover. And the men knew it, Goffrey thought sourly. Oh, didn't they know it? At least Blaskane had had the good grace to appear bewildered, but that was not enough, for it was all too clear that even the Major had now been taken in by the so-called saint's lies. Goffrey had thought to perhaps take the man into his confidence, but now as the wounded martyr and talisman of the crusade? Not a chance. Goffrey clutched the thing beneath his shirt and muttered a prayer of thanks to the Emperor for his clarity of sight.
Yes, Saint, I understand,
Blaskane was saying.
So the basilisks concentrate all fire upon Sector 9 of the outer walls, and we rush the breach. That is your plan?
Even if the artillery does bring down a section of wall, by the time we cross the open ground to exploit it, our enemies will have moved their reserves into position to block us,
came the tinny voice of Captain Macklin through the voxponder.
I'm sorry, Saint. I'm not sure I see this working.
We will not wait for the breach to be opened, replied the Saint, her transmitted voice redolent with serenity and conviction. I trust in the Emperor. A way shall open for us, and we shall pass through it. Then on into the streets and towards the mines before the foe can react. The Emperor has shown me that the source of this world's corruption lies deep within those mines. We will fight our way through it, and we will defeat it.
You are suggesting that we charge the wall before the breach is made?
Asked Blaskane.
What if our artillery cannot get the job done in time, or at all? We'd be left sat before 50-foot-high ferrocrete ramparts, with no way forward or back, at the mercy of their guns.
If the Saint says that the breach will be made, then it will,
came Aniqua Meritorius's voice.
Have faith, Major.
Oh, I do,
said Blaskane, and Goffrey skinned back his lips at the solicitousness he heard in the man's voice.
But I must think of the lives of my soldiers.
Of course, such is only right and proper, for the good shepherd thinks first of his flock, said Celestine. I will lead my Gemini up onto the walls, and we will do what we can to combat the gun crews from there. And my sisters will lend their prayers to this endeavour, the better to shield our attack beneath the glory of the Emperor's light. There was a moment of profound silence over the vox, during which Goffrey hoped that one or other of the Imperial officers might see sense. Surely the demon Celestine could not have bewitched them all.
So be it. I'll disseminate the orders now, said Blaskane. We move in 15 minutes.
Emperor, have mercy on us all, said Captain Macklin.
He will, said Sister Meritorius, and Goffrey was surprised to hear the conviction in her tone.
He will not, hissed Goffrey under his breath.
They were all damned, then. They would be led to the slaughter like the faithless cattle they were. Well, he would move amongst them like the proverbial wolf, ready to do his last duty for the Emperor. Goffrey had already nudged a handful of particularly suggestible Cadians. The broken, the resentful, the dismayed, they would follow his commands when the time came. He had a few more candidates in mind, and, by the sound of things, scant time to act.
Emperor, fear not. There is still one faithful man alive upon this world,
said Goffrey, setting off down the ridge towards the massing Cadian soldiery.
And he has the strength to do your will.
Engines revved and banners unfurled as the order to attack rang out along the Imperial lines. The Cadian regimental standard, with its portcullis gate and eagle-clutched lightning bolts, fluttered proud in the breeze. There was no speech given, no stirring words for a suicidal assault such as this. There was only the presence of the Saint, shining like a guiding star. That, thought Sister Meritorius, was enough. When Saint Celestine had stood over her in the crater fields, when she had banished Meritorius's doubts and raised her up to fight anew, it had changed everything. Meritorius still felt shame, but now it was not at a paucity of faith within her. Rather,
She felt shame that it had taken her so long to recognize that the light of the Emperor did not shine down from the heavens, but rather it burned bright from within every one of his faithful servants. She set off at a jog, wielding her bolter by its pistol grip in one hand, and her crackling power sword in the other. Her sisters advanced around her, imagifiers raising their icons high as the few dozen battle sisters raised their voices in the prayer of faithful lambastation. They led the way over the ridge, spoil grit grinding under Meritorious's boots, before the ground dropped away and she found herself accelerating into a run as the slope took her. Imperial Guard tanks and transports roared as their track units rose proud of the ridge, then dropped, slamming down as the vehicles accelerated. Massed men and women of Cadia poured in alongside them, hundreds upon hundreds of the desperate faithful charging into battle upon the promise of a miracle. As she hit the flat ground at the bottom of the slope, Meritorious knew it was a miracle they hadn't already been blasted into oblivion. There was no way the enemy could have failed to detect such a sizable force outside their walls, and she was just thankful that gunships and rocket strikes hadn't already put paid to their assault. For all that, she found she was in good spirits. As the rippling roar of basilisk fire echoed from behind the ridge, Meritorious realized she truly believed they would open a path. Their shells whipped away towards the city, still a good half a mile ahead, and hammered the designated wall section. Fiery explosions blossomed, and she felt their heat within her heart. Meritorious had seen the light, she supposed. Or rather, she had seen what the light of the saint laid bare. The Emperor was not gone. The throne world had not burned. Meritorious knew this now with a certainty that could only be faith. She recognized that. If there had been a darkness upon her soul these past weeks, it had lain within her, not without. The canoness's death, the coming of the storms, the fall of this planet's faithful, to endure such a string of punishing blows, one coming upon another, and then to find herself solely responsible for the well-being of her sisters in a war that seemed wholly impossible to win. It was no wonder the galaxy felt darker. She enjoyed the simple sensations of her footfalls pounding bedrock and her weapon grips in her hands. There had been no miraculous transformation within her, just a gathering of perspective. The realization had come upon her, as she watched the saint defeat the demons of chaos, that the end had not come yet. Meritorious might not feel her faith as keenly as she once had, but she knew it lay within her still, regathering its strength. For now, she fought for a holy cause in the light of Saint Celestine, alongside faithful and determined battle sisters of her order, for an emperor who she now knew still watched over her even in her darkest times. For Aniqua Meritorious, that was enough. A terrible droning roar began to rise from deep within Shambach. It was an industrial siren whose note had been corrupted into something dark and unnatural. Meritorious realized that the sound was not continuous. It was a voice, forming dark words, bellowing them forth with such a force of hatred that they struck like physical blows. "The voice of the war engine," she cried. "Shun its words, faithful. They are naught but the bellowing cries of a mindless beast." Around her, Meritorious's sisters chanted louder, more fervently, matching their battle prayers against the war engine's call. Behind them, the basilisks spoke again, sending another hail of shells whipping overhead. Yet now the guns of Shambach answered, and in that moment Meritorious realized just how desperate their odds were. If the barrage fire of the basilisks was a roll of thunder, the cacophony of the city's guns